Well, thanks, Rani, and it's wonderful to be with you. It's great to be with a wonderful creative group. And especially on this first Sunday of Advent, it's a wonderful time of hoping and waiting. So what I thought might be helpful for us is to look at what we long for shapes our life and the importance of our imagination in thinking through and being present to what actually is it that we long for, and that as we lean into that, how does it shape our life? We're shaped by what we seek. And I thought I'd use a few helps here. I don't know if many of you remember the old slide shows. And I remember as a kid sitting in these darkened rooms with parents and cousins and aunts and uncles who were showing their holiday slides. And I would drop off to sleep. You know, they'd say, oh, just a few more. And they'd go, click, click, another one. Click, click, another one. So anyway, I've brought my slide thing with you, but we'll only have four this morning. So I hope that's okay. So you'll need to be able to see the screen. The first one is, if you look carefully, it's from Isaiah 40, and it's about God tending the flock like a sheep. If you look really closely, you can see Jesus as the shepherd holding the lambs close to his heart. Isaiah 40:11. If you look really closely, he's got two lambs there, right up close to his heart. Can you see them? And you can see that they're so close that, in fact, Jesus can probably, as the shepherd, smell the breath of those little lambs. And the lambs could actually smell and even feel the heartbeat of the shepherd. It's an amazing picture. It's an amazing picture of intimacy. There's another one. This is Luke, from Luke's wonderful gospel, and it's the Magnificat. It comes from the Magnificat. And here's Mary, and you can see that she's actually depicting, if you like, she's pointing to this scene, and here we have a whole lot of very, very poor people coming and being fed. And if you look carefully, you can see they're poor, they're the outcast, they're the rejected. You can see by what they're wearing. You can see the expressions on their faces. And she says, God has filled the hungry with good things. And you can see from their expressions, this is absolute delight. Unexpected. They're being fed amazingly. And then over in the corner, and it says, the wealthy are sent away empty-handed. And you can see the kind of puzzlement. Those who've always had whatever they've wanted somehow are no longer in control. And you can see that puzzlement in their faces. And this is the Magnificat. This is what we hear great choruses singing, and often we miss the fact that it's actually a highly political song where those who are on their thrones are just turfed off, and God turns the world upside down. So this is a highly disruptive song and a highly disruptive picture that she gives us. Two more. One more is from John chapter 20. And this is where you can see Thomas and Jesus here. Remember, Thomas is already, before this picture is taken, he'd said, if I don't see those nail wounds myself in Jesus, I'm not going to believe. And Jesus hears this, even though he didn't say it directly to Jesus. So Jesus has come now, and here he is, and he's actually showing his wounds. And you can see, look how close they are to each other. They're very close. You can't. It's all in here. It's all in here. It's all in here. It's what we see. We're called to see. So here you can picture. There is Jesus, very close to Thomas. And Thomas is just aghast. You can have a look at his expression, and he's just aghast. And he says, my Lord and my God. And it's a very intimate moment. And then Jesus, as we know, then says, well, you've believed because you've seen. Blessed are those who believe who haven't seen. And I think that's part of Advent, isn't it? We're called to believe what we can't yet see, but we're called to imagine it, to see it in ourselves. And so here's the last one, and this is from our reading. And this is the part in Isaiah 2 where it says, they beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. And so look at that. You can see just ordinary everyday people beating these swords. Things of death, weapons of death, beating them into things that actually give life, that are used for farming, that give new life and fruit and nourishment and nurture. And so if you look at this and let it sit deeply in your soul and in mine, what are we doing that's beating our own swords that are in here and our own weaponry that's in here to convert them into things that give life, that are life-giving? And apparently outside, I haven't seen it, but outside the United Nations head office, these words are along the wall there. So it's a universal picture, isn't it? So that's the end of my slides. Only four. But I think it's important that we see, and it's interesting that in verse 1 it says, the word that Isaiah, son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah. So he saw the word. Do you and I see the word? It calls out of us, our imaginations, to actually see it and see it in sharp detail, deep, deep detail. And so that's the thing, is as we come into this hoping, what are we hoping for? What vision, what dream, what longing do we have? What picture do we have of what we're living towards? And so I think that's one of the invitations of Advent. What are we picturing? What are we dreaming about? Brueggemann, in his when he looks at this passage, he says that this is very similar, or he would put in the same category as Martin Luther King's I Had a Dream. It's this picture, this image, this longing that at the time it is said, there's utter devastation. You think, you've got to be joking. You've got to be kidding me. But it's this wonderful picture. And what it calls in us is not to sit back and, you know, delight in the rhetoric and think, what an amazing speech Martin Luther King did, or what an amazing speech here, if you like, that Isaiah is giving. But it evokes in us, or is meant to call out in us, action along these lines, to actually enact, to put into action what we see, this dream, this vision. So this is the dream and the vision that comes out of Isaiah 2. You know, in Isaiah 1, it's a description of utter devastation. Isaiah 3 is a picture of utter devastation. But Isaiah 2 is this wonderful dream in the midst. And that's a bit like our situation. We can look around the world and we see absurd devastation. Crazy, terrible, devastating situation. But our call is to imagine and live into that vision, a totally different reality, which is a kind of a wondrous absurdness. A wondrous absurdness, the kind of absurdness that brought Jesus as a child, that God came to us in such vulnerability, using a peasant girl who lived on the wrong side of the tracks. It's that kind of God that does these crazy but wondrously absurd things. And so it's a different reality. And with the 24/7 bombardment that we get with newsreel, these images, and I don't know about you, but the images I see really stay in me in a huge place, and I have to push them apart and really make way for a different vision, a different reality. It is a reality. It's a different reality. In the midst of all the absurdity that's happening around here, that's devastating, there is this wondrous absurdity that sits right in the heart of all things. And that's what I want to live into. That's what I long for. That's what I hope for. And I want that to be changing me and forming me. In Isaiah 43, he goes on in a different place and he says, "See, I'm doing a new thing," says God. "Now it springs up. Do you see it? I'm making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland." We're called to picture this amazing different reality. And I think that that's what's beckoning us, perhaps very particularly this Advent, with such disastrous things happening around us. So, having a look at this passage in a little bit more detail and noticing all the time, what is it that we focus on? Do we end up coming away from the 24/7 newsreel and just having that? That's the picture that we're holding in ourselves? Or do we actually make way for a different reality, and to lean into that and let that mold us and call out action into us to be a different community, an upside down community, part of a community that turns the world upside down just because we do things as God would do them. So in the passage it says, "In the days to come the mountain shall be established as the highest of mountains." Well, we know that mountain isn't the highest of mountains. So again, it's God doing something different. God changes our geography. He makes plains into mountains and mountains into plains. God changes geography hugely. So God's about turning all sorts of things upside down. "And shall be raised above the hills, and the nations shall stream to it." And it's crazy, isn't it? Because streams, if you say something streams to something, you usually think of something streaming downwards. Streams go downwards. But this is so anti-gravity. They're streaming upwards. And again, it's this reverse of the culture that's around us. It's walking a different walk, going in a different direction to a totally different place. So what is that vision of streaming to a different place, counterculturally? And then it talks about the God of Jacob twice, the God of Jacob and the house of Jacob. Why Jacob? I am always amazed that we don't have the God of Moses. There isn't that sort of place, but the God of Jacob comes through and through. And I don't know about you, but Jacob isn't particularly appealing to me. He starts off as this horrible deceiver, goes on this journey, runs away, bit of a coward. But then we have that amazing interaction in Jabbok where he wrestles with God. And then finally, what God's been waiting for, he clings to God and says, "I will not let go until you bless me." And then he's given a new name, and it's Israel, the one who has prevailed with God. You've hung in there. You've changed. It's that new name. That's the climax. So this is the God of Jacob, God of all of us who are deceivers, who are the foolish of the world, and yet God uses even us, the foolish of the world, to surprise the so-called wise of the world. So this is the kind of God that we have, the one that gives us a new name and brings the best out of us, calls out in us the best of who we are, our true selves, over and above all of that. And then it goes on and says they'll stream up to this house where God may teach us God's ways so that we can walk in God's paths. And so again, how do we live? How do we live? How then shall we live in the light of what is happening around us? And again, it's what vision are you living towards? What do you hold up, if you like, as your icon towards which you work and live? Who is this God, and what is God calling you into? What are you yearning for? What do you find occupies your center space in your interior landscape? Because what we focus on is what we become. What are you focusing on this Advent? What am I focusing on this Advent? And the ways and the paths are indications that we're all pilgrims. As Stanley Hauerwas says, we're, We're resident aliens. We don't really belong here. We're here, but we don't really belong here. We live in a different reality. It's a bit like, Australia. You see the map of Australia that the latecomers have put together with all our state borders, and then you look at what is seen as the Aboriginal, the Indigenous people's understanding of how the interior of Australia is shaped and where the different borderlands are and so on. It's a total reconfiguration of country. And that's what God does with us. He invites us into a totally different configuration of how we live in this land. Differently, totally differently. And then it goes on to say, God will be judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. And this is the hope that we have, that we don't see justice now a lot of the time. But I don't know about you, but I long to see justice for so many. And yet we're not going to see it, maybe, in this life, in my life. But it will happen, because this is the kind of God we have. It's a God of justice. And so if it doesn't happen in this life, it will happen in the next. And it will be reality, and it will be real, and it will be true, and all will be put right, and the first will be last, and the last will be first. There will be a time when all is put right. That's the kind of God I live into. That's the kind of God that companions us and says, do you have the eyes to see that this will happen? Live into that hope. And so as we work for justice, we're working from that place that says, I know that I know that I know that this God is good, and I will drive a stake into the ground no matter what is happening around me and say, God is good and God is just. And so all I do comes from the energy of that place, not the energy that's stirred up by the 24/7 newsreel that brings about anger and dissatisfaction and angst and annoyance and ridicule and cynicism. That produces a lot of energy, but it's not kingdom energy. It's not energy from the light of God. But there's immense amount of energy in the light of God that gives us that sense of hope. This is where we work from, because we know that we know that we know. Tutu was asked, are you optimistic about what's happening in the Middle East? And he said, no, not at all. I have no evidence whatsoever to have any optimism. But I have hope, and I hope against hope, because I know God. And so that's where we stand, and that's where our energy and our renewal and our life comes from. Is from that place of knowing. This life is not all there is. Do we believe that? Do we live into that? And then just lastly, they shall beat their swords into plowshares and spears into pruning hooks. It's the call to us. What are we doing about our own internal stuff? It's a vision. It will come to that. One day there will be that true shalom, which is all about well-being of everyone. Right relationship with God, right relationship with everyone. It's not that individual peace that goes and sits on a cliff and says, that's not the kind of peace this is about. It's that shalom that's so big and inclusive. Thomas Merton says, instead of hating the people you think are war makers, hate the appetites and the disorder in your own soul, which are the cause of war. And he goes on and says, if you love peace, then hate injustice, hate tyranny, hate greed, but hate these things in yourself, not in another. It starts with me. And Advent is the time of new beginnings. It's interesting, isn't it, that Advent is the beginning of our church calendar. The rest of our culture is screaming to this terrible end-of-year halt. We've got this new beginning. So this screaming to the end of year halt with great frenzy of buying and panic and busyness is all happening there. But this is our new beginning. And this is where we look for, what am I looking for? This is where we look for the hope to be reborn in us again at this time. So I guess my question to us is, what is it that you're hoping for? What is it that you're focusing on? Because that's what's moulding you and that's what's moulding me. What is God calling in this Advent in 2016 for you to picture? What is your picture? What is your slide in vivid detail that you want to focus on and live toward and live into in terms of the reality. Our eschatology bleeds into the present. What is your present? How is that moulded by what you understand about the future? So maybe to spend a couple of minutes talking to the person next to you about what is your slide? What's your picture? What's your focus? What's your vision? What's your longing for this Advent?